So great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. On this edition of Garden Talk, we turn our attention to houseplants and organic things we can do with houseplants to keep them healthy and to make them look great. And we'll find out all about it as we visit with our two guests today who know a whole lot about houseplants, David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth. David has a PhD in botany, has years of experience as a plant pathologist. Catherine is naturalist and author, and together they've written actually four books. And the one we're going to talk about today is What's Wrong with My Houseplant? Save Your Indoor Plants with 100% Organic Solutions. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments about houseplants. Maybe what's wrong with your houseplant, or maybe a houseplant you'd like to buy, or maybe you have, I want somebody to recommend a certain type of houseplant. All those are good things. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Catherine Wadsworth, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Well, thank you for having me. This is always so much fun.
Oh, it's great fun. And David Deardorff, thank you very much as well.
You bet. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You two are giving a presentation at some point today out in someplace not here. Is it Seattle?
Yes, we're in Seattle at the big flower show in Seattle, the Northwest Flower and Garden Show, and we're giving a seminar. It's actually this evening, early evening, on the best houseplants ever.
Oh, there are such things.
Yes, there are.
Well, I tell you what, you've got a book here that's going to be really popular, I think, with a lot of folks, because you're talking about organic ways to work with your houseplants and to keep them healthy and happy the organic way.
Absolutely, yes. Plants that you have in your home, of course, you need to be careful. If you're going to use chemicals to remedy pests or diseases, then you have to be careful what you use. And, of course, organic solutions are safer than some of the things out there. So it's just wise to be cautious.
Absolutely. And, you know, let me turn to Catherine for just a minute. Your intake, or your take, I should say, on houseplants is, are they getting more popular again? And sir, they seem to run in cycles, don't they?
Yes, they really do. They were very popular when they first were introduced, which was really in the Victorian era, and then they became very popular again in the 60s and 70s, and they're resurging now. And I don't exactly know why, but it's wonderful to see.
Yeah,
they clean the air, you know, in our homes, and I think that's a big reason.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. You know, I think one thing that may hold people back is there's been quite a rise over the years in the number of pets that that people have in their homes. Like, I've got two cats. Well, I always have to think about what plants I might have in the house that the cats might not get sick from or die from. And that may be one reason why houseplants lost a little favor for a while.
Well, I think that's possible, especially cats who like to nibble on green things, especially cats that are not allowed outdoors, which is frequently the case. Dogs, I think, less mess with houseplants less than cats do. But there's wonderful ways you can do that. One of the things we did in the book, for example, is we marked all those that were potentially toxic. And another way people have it is you have some of the grasses growing that cats can eat, and they love them.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like to have some of those those cat grasses around, because they do really enjoy, especially Coco. Coco really likes that grass and eats it a lot. You know, you mentioned air quality, And I, all right, you've got one little houseplant. It's probably not going to do a whole lot. But what? How do houseplants help with air quality?
Well, let me let David field that one.
Sure. Go ahead, David.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, there was a recent NASA study on different houseplants' ability to absorb chemicals out of the air. The chemicals that outgas from plywood and carpeting and upholstery and other materials that are used in construction these days, that caused the sick building syndrome that was in such in the news a few years ago. And a lot of people have chemical sensitivities to those substances, like the I'm trying to think of them. There's benzene and toluene and xylene and
all those ones that end with lean, L-E-N-E.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Well, they're in the air. They come out of the materials we use in construction. And, you know, you can't detect it with your nose, but it's there, and it's enough to make some people sick. Well, some plants are really, really good at absorbing those chemicals out of the air. And a lot of them, ones that NASA has studied, are in the skunk cabbage family. Like the peace lily, spathiphyllum,
yep.
It, I think, absorbs all of those chemicals. The one next that absorbs, you know, all but one of those chemicals is the Chinese evergreen.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Chinese evergreen. And that's a kind of a pretty plant.
Oh, it's a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
You know, it's Aglaonema species and hybrids, especially some of the new ones coming from breeders in Thailand and Malaysia and Sumatra. They're gorgeous. They have red leaves and pink leaves and just beautiful.
Oh, that's wonderful. David, I tell you what, we're getting a little feedback from you, so I'm going to take you off the air here for a minute. Don't worry, we'll get you back, and we'll see if we can fix that line. And in the meantime, we'll just talk with Catherine. So let's do that right now, and we'll take care of that. And let's go to Chris in Stoughton, who has a question for you, Catherine. Hi, Chris. Chris, are you, let's see, well, first I need to put you on. Chris, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Larry. And thank you to the authors. I know you're talking about the new book, but I have What's Wrong With My Plant, How I Can Fix It. I'm an avid outdoor gardener, and just the entire layout of the book, it's fantastic. So thank you for creating a book in a very different format, a much more useful format to people like myself.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. My question is this. I'm looking for a houseplant for a friend who's kind of is just moving into a new place. And they kind of enjoy gardening, but they call themselves brown thumbs, if you will.
Okay.
So I'm looking for something that would be relatively easy to maintain and have a decent lifespan. You know, flowers, I guess, would be a bonus, but not necessarily an absolute.
Okay. So what do you think, Catherine?
Tell me again the criteria you're looking for.
Well, just something that's going to be easy. They do travel a little bit, not extensively or for long periods of time, but, you know, a couple days here, a couple days there. Something that has nice structure, nice foliage, but is relatively easy to maintain for a beginning gardener.
Do you know what kind of light they have in their house and what kind of room? You know,
the living room is south facing.
And it'd be in the living room. So they're going to get some light, south facing light.
Yep. Good south facing light. That's great. So what would you I have David on with me here because he's really the expert in these things. So I'm going to ask him what he would recommend for your friend. With south facing, just a nice, beautiful, structured plant.
Yeah. And we're getting David back on the air. So we'll, you know, one of the plants that I would just recommend myself especially when you're talking about people who might be gone. I had a Christmas cactus in my office that I never watered, or I forget to water, and it did need a lot of light, and it did flower very nicely, and maybe you'd get too much light in a south facing. I'm not sure, but it's a plant that I would think about. And I tell you what, Chris, we'll have David back on in a minute or two, and so stay listening, and we'll see what he's easy to care for a plant we can handle.
Yeah, he's actually right here. What I wanted to say about Christmas cactus, though, is that south-facing is probably too much light.
Yeah, that's you're probably right about that. But if they have, I did not have my Christmas cactus in front of a window at all. I had it somewhere else, you know, away from the window, which actually was kind of nice to be able to put it somewhere else and not have it on the windowsill. So anyway,
Well, some of the plants that do really well in the south facing are some of the plants that will give you fruit, like a Meyer lemon or even a lime tree. That's why I was wondering how much space your friends might have. And they're surprisingly easy cares, but of course, then you do have to look for scale and things like that on those fruit trees that stay small.
I love
the Meyer lemons. Do you have to take those outside then during the summer?
You don't have to. We do, but you certainly don't have to. In fact, when we take them outside, that's usually when they get the scale, and then we have to wash
get
them
rid of it. Yeah,
when we're inside. But they do very nicely in the south window.
Yeah, they would. And I actually have Limey, my lime tree, and my daughter named, which produces tons of limes, is in a south facing window in the winter, and then she goes out on the porch in the summer and she sits out there all summer. And yeah, you're right about scale. It's a little of that, but you know what?
But we get pretty much all the lemons we need from one lemon and one lime tree in our house. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, David's
great.
Yeah. David, you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. Oh, you sound much better. Okay. Thanks so much. And Chris, I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you. And again, keep up the great work. We really enjoy your books.
All right. And let's talk some more about your book for just a minute, because I'm with Chris on this. I really like your the setup. And unfortunately, I left it in my office, so I don't have it in front of me at the moment. But obviously, I've spent time with it. And wonderful photography. But just explain how you have it organized.
Oh, okay. We have it organized with all the houseplants that we considered for the book. The first part of the book is called Turning the Page Right Now. We called it Prepare for Success.
Yep.
Because that's the section where we talk about light and watering and temperature, all the things that you need to pay attention to in order for best success with any plant, really. But how light affects how much light you get from a window that faces south versus a window that faces north, for example. So we go through all these factors about your home and the environment that's provided by your home. So that's the first part of the book. And then the second part is plant portraits, where every plant gets a description of the plant, a photograph, and then the optimum household environment. How much light? What's the temperature regime? How much water does it need? And et cetera. What kind of potting medium and fertilizer? So we cover all those aspects of these plant portraits for every plant in the book. There's, I think, 150 plants.
Yeah, there's a lot of plants.
It's a lot of plants, and there's a heck of a lot of house plants. It's just really fun. And then they're organized into groups. So, because a lot of times, you know, when people buy a house plant, it's in the store and it's just labeled miscellaneous tropical. It doesn't have a name. So, you don't know what the plant is until you either somebody tells you what it is, or you find a picture. And that's one of the values of all the photography in our book, is you can look through the pictures and find a photograph of your plant, and then you can you know what it is and what it needs to be successful.
Yeah. I like your section on organic solutions to common problems, too.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, that's like we were saying earlier. We think it's important, you know, what chemicals you're going to use in your home are, it's important consideration to choose organic ones. But it's also true that, you know, I know from years and years of teaching the Master Gardener program and just, you know, being a plant pathologist, that about 75% of the time when there's something wrong with a plant, whether it's in the garden or in the house, it's the growing condition problems that are most common.
Yeah.
And you know, these are the ones where you adjust the amount of light, you adjust the amount of water, you adjust the temperature. These fix the issues where you don't need chemicals. But if you have pests, if you have insect pests or spider mites or something like that, or scale insects on your citrus, then you do need to start looking at some remedies.
We have Chuck in Michigan up next. Chuck, hold on for just a second here. We'll get to you next, but I want to remind you as you listen in, David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth, our guests today, they are the authors of What's Wrong with My Houseplant? Our on-air producer today, Brianne Chasso. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be getting some tips from straw bale gardening experts coming up next week at this time, but right now, taking a look at your houseplants with our guest David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth, authors of a really nice book. It's called What's Wrong with My Houseplant. Join in. Questions or comments, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Chuck in Michigan, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call, and I want to say I've listened for a long, long time to you, and you are the greatest host in public radio history. Well, you're just amazing. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
I've got a Norfolk Island pine. I think that's what it's called. I was given it about 8 years ago. It's about 10 feet tall now, and it just doesn't look as vigorous as it used to. We repotted it about 2 years ago, and it's in a pot that weighs about there's about 100 pounds of soil in the pot. And it's on a north-facing side of the house, but that side of the house has got all windows to it. And I'm just wondering if there's some nutrient I should be supplementing it with, and then also as far as how much water and what's the ideal temperature for that tree.
All right. David, what do you think?
Well, one of the things about Norfolk Island pines are that they're wonderful houseplants. We like to advise people to use them, for example, because they're in your home all year long. At Christmas time, you know, dress it up and use it for a Christmas tree. That's really, really fun. But they do have fragile roots, so when you repot them, it can set them back until the root system recovers.
Okay. Do they like to be pot-bound?
Yeah, kind of. That can be a good thing for them. It's just to let them be pot-bound because they, you know, they are big trees in the wild. They get huge. So, and you want them to stay small indoors. So it's probably a good idea to leave them somewhat pot-bound. Shift it to a container, you know, with a diameter 2 inches bigger than the pot that it's already in, mm-hmm. and you know, move it gently. And you need to have a heavy ceramic pot to keep the tree from toppling over.
What about fertilizer, though? Can you take a soil test of your whatever your mix is, or?
Yeah, it's a little bit fussy about nutrients. It does need a fair amount of nitrogen because you want that vegetative growth. But you also want to be able to supply it with micronutrients like iron, manganese, and magnesium. So make sure that your fertilizer that you're using is supplying those micronutrients. Sometimes seaweed extract is a good extract to use to provide micronutrients.
Seaweed extract, okay. That's available, I think, at garden centers, is it not?
Yes, it is, yeah.
So then how often would you supply fertilizer to a plant like that?
Probably twice a year.
Okay.
Once in the spring when it starts into active growth, because, you know, it knows when the days are getting longer and it'll start to grow actively. So, yeah, in the springtime, and then again probably in midsummer.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. Chuck, does that help?
As far as frequency of watering, should it feel damp all the time, or how often should I water it?
You know, a good way to go is to stick your finger down into the pot, and until your tip of your finger, you know, you can sense when the temperature changes and where the water is, basically, because it's cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Wait until the surface of the potting medium is dry to a depth of 1 inch,
okay,
and then water.
All right. Okay.
That's an easy way to remember.
Very good.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. He was talking about that 10 foot high Norfolk Island pine. I had a cactus once, and we had probably a room like his. Actually on a lake home, and there was a vaulted ceiling, and I had that cactus for years, and it just kept growing up and up and up, and it got to be around 16 feet. It was amazing. I love that plant. And then I forget what happened. Anyway, the top part of it broke off. I was on the second floor, and you could actually deal with it up there. And the top broke off, and I let it lay for, I don't know, a week or 10 days or so, and stuck it in some sand, and it rooted up again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're really incredible the way they do that. That's they're nice. We have a pothos that's sitting on a shelf fairly high up in the kitchen, and its stems are at least 15 feet long now. They grow clear across the top of the refrigerator, down the refrigerator, and across the kitchen floor.
That's great. I love it. Oh, boy. Bill in Ashland has something for us, so let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Hi, Larry. Yeah, well, you talk about easy plants. You know, I'm one of those people that can kill a house plant just by looking at it, you know. And so what I did last year, this was last March I did this, I took a snow globe, pretty fair-sized one, and I took some moss and planted it in there and just sealed it up. You know, and boy, it's almost like a little miniature garden. You get these little red flowers and things like that. And, oh, just something to look at, and you don't have to take care of it at all. You know, I mean, it's all yours.
So there's no hole? I mean, it makes its own water and so forth?
Yeah, it's got its own little atmosphere in there. You know, yeah, it clouds up and soaks up again. Yeah, I haven't touched that thing in 11 months now, and that's probably why it's still alive. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool. Do you have anything like that in your home, Catherine?
Sorry, that was a loud noise. No, we don't have a that would be sort of like a miniature terrarium, but
yeah.
We don't have that. But what we do have is air plants, you know, the little
Tillandsias
that sit on the stick, you know, a friend gave us some, and you know, the Tillandsia was just sort of glued to the stick, and it's been alive for years. We just missed it, and it sits in a globe, but the globe is not sealed.
Well, that's pretty
cool.
Is
that wonderful?
Well, Bill, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much, and we're going to turn to Sue in Appleton next, who has something for us as well. Sue, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for being on today. This has been on my mind for a while. I inherited a Christmas cactus. It's in about a half-gallon pot, but it had, the soil is 100% clay with absolutely no organics.
Oh.
And I was considering gently washing off the soil, but I know that they have real fine roots. And then, you know, then putting potting soil.
Gotcha.
And I'm wondering what you guys would have for an opinion. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, so this is just essentially you want to repot a Christmas cactus.
Except totally remove the soil.
And yeah. get rid of all the soil. Okay. What do you think, David?
Well, a good way to handle a Christmas cactus is to get a good quality potting soil, not garden soil, but
yep.
you know, ordinary potting soil, and mix it half-half with sand to improve the drainage.
Okay.
They are true cactus, but they're also epiphytes. They grow on trees in the forest where they live. So they want more organic matter in their potting mix than a true cactus would. I mean, a regular cactus would.
Right.
So it needs to be free draining, but humus rich soil mix for them.
What about her question about, all right, she wants to get all of the soil off before she transplants it. Can you, you know, really do that or just go for most of the soil?
I'd go for most of the soil rather than all of it because it does so much damage to the root system.
Yeah.
That I just try to shake off, you know, gently as much as you can because the roots are fine and you're going to lose a lot of roots anyway. So just kind of do it carefully and then use this mix that I just described for them. They don't need to have big pots. They kind of like to be a little bit pot bound.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It is a big plant.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if I should or not.
I'd go ahead and do it. Ahead and do it. So it sounds to me like you want to do it. I think you should go ahead and do it. Now, you can always take some cuttings off of it just in case.
I've done that. Yeah, I've done that. But the cuttings are tiny. And
yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
We have one that we just love. It's a nice sized plant, but you know, branches, little chunks of it keep falling off.
Yep.
And I have saving them. I just put them in a cup, to, you know, waiting for them for me to pot them up, and they're already growing roots.
There you go. It's a good thing to do. Well, Sue.
Yeah.
Good luck with that Christmas cactus, and call back. And by the way, would you do it right now, David, or would you wait? Is now an okay?
Oh, now is a good time because it should be finished blooming or nearly finished blooming, and then it's going to start into really active growth and, you know, make lots of new leaves. So I would up-pot it right now.
All right, there you go, Sue. Thanks a lot for calling. And call me back in a month and tell me how it's going, okay? Appreciate the call. Alex in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Alex.
Hi. I have kind of a pet peeve. It's kind of associated with the question. I've been a florist for years and years and years. And we would always get in from growers what they call dish gardens. I hated them because they will pot up anywhere from 4 to 7 plants that have completely different growing needs. And, you know, they'll have like a little tiny palm. I just saw one over Valentine's Day that had an old man cactus and one of the grafted ones with a brightly colored globe thing on top, along with a palm, a peperomia, and a bit of philodendron, and something I couldn't even identify.
Oh, my goodness.
It makes no sense to me, and I don't understand why the growing industry has not gotten a clue, unless it's just because the people don't know any better, and they leave them in that pot altogether, and they all die, so they have to rush out and buy another one. I mean, It just baffles me. I was gobsmacked when I saw the one with the cactus and a palm. You know, on what planet do those grow together?
You should have taken a photo of that one and posted it up on our Facebook page.
Oh.
I would like to see that. Oh, my
goodness. My God. That's a crime against horticulture. Really?
Oh, boy. And, you know, they do it probably because, okay, they look pretty together now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they want. It's the contrast of color and texture and form that they're putting together a pretty arrangement. But, yeah, just as you said, it's temporary. They're going to die.
Really pretty ceramic
mold. Is it they're temporary?
Well, yeah, they're temporary. That's for sure.
We were helping somebody once who had put her pothos on top of her refrigerator in a dark corner, and she didn't understand why it wasn't thriving. And so David was explaining about how plants grow and everything, and this woman said, "Oh, it's just like it's alive." It's amazing how many people don't know.
That's right.
Well, I tell you what, we got a lot of smart listeners here at Wisconsin
yes.
Public Radio, I can tell you.
I can tell.
A lot of Master Gardeners. In fact, Master Gardeners can get continuing education credits for listening to this show.
Oh, how wonderful.
Fabulous.
Yeah, because we have people like you on, as a matter of fact, who know what they're talking about and will learn quite a bit. You know, you mentioned temporary houseplants. You actually have a section on that in your book.
Yeah, we do.
And how would you define a temporary houseplant?
A temporary houseplant is a plant that is not, in my mind, it's not present all year long. In other words, something like Achimenes, the Cupid's bow, that goes dormant in the winter, it dies to the ground.
Yeah.
So what you have is a pot of dirt for half the year rather than a plant in your home. So, you know, you want to put it in a closet or something until springtime when it starts to grow again. So I think of that as a temporary houseplant, but also when you force spring bulbs like tulips and daffodils into bloom and you bring them in the house because they're in full bloom and you let them grow in their pots for a few weeks until the flowers fade, then they have to go outside again. So it's like a living bouquet that's in your home for a period of time, but isn't with you. You know, it's not your companion for 12 months of the year.
Yeah. It's like, it reminds me, I know we're getting into that season. We're in the Lenten season right now, and Easter lilies at Christmas time, at Easter time, you see in your church and you take that home and you've got it for a while, and then maybe that's the end of it.
Yeah, then you want to plant it outside.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're beautiful garden plants, but they're not house plants.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to Betty and Brown Deer next. Betty, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. I have, I was supposed to do a Caribbean garden, and I had a bunch of like a lemon tree and a coffee tree and an aloe, and I couldn't find a good cactus. So I went to the produce section, and there's this big cactus thing, and I was going to try eating one, and they looked not good. So I stuck it in a pot. Well, now I've got it in my dining room, and it's putting up two big things that look like it's going to be more cactus. And I'm wondering how to take care of this so I can put it back in the garden again.
Wow.
You know, you go in the produce section, you got all this funny-looking stuff. And some of it grows.
That's a great story, Betty.
I have a ginger root that has some nubs, and I think I'd like to grow that, too. I'll bet that'll grow. But what is this thing? Does it have roots
on it? What does it look like? Is it a flat?
It's an opuntia. It's
a
big...
It's a prickly pear.
It's a prickly pear, yeah.
Yeah, prickly pear.
Things that it sent up were not fruits. At first I thought it was going to give me some fruit, but they're green and they're growing long, so I think they're going to grow long and then get fat. And I'm thinking maybe it's time to feed it.
Oh,
Yeah, that's exactly what they'll do. The pads that you buy in the produce department will grow, and that's obviously what's happening. So you've planted it, and it's starting to grow, and those that probably have what look like sort of a normal stem, but that's going to get wide and fat as it grows. But it's not going to survive the winter in your area.
Not outside, anyway.
Not outside.
It's in my house, waiting to go back out into the Caribbean garden.
Okay, good. good. Yeah.
Can I also grow my ginger root? I bought two by mistake, and one has little green nubbies on it.
Why, sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll see what that'll do.
What's Betty, that? you're from Brown Deer, but you have a green thumb.
Well, Betty, yeah,
definitely.
Thank you so much for calling. Oh, that was a delightful. Boy, take a picture of that. Take a photo of that cactus and send it into our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to see that. Thank you so much. Oh, man. Sharon in Wauwatosa, it is your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi there. I have two jade plants that I got when my daughters were in kindergarten, and they're in their 30s now. However, they are... my cousin has a huge one, and she's had it for just about as long. It's like a tree, but mine are like spindly and leggy, and they're no more than like a foot and a half tall. And the top leaves, when I water them, they get wrinkly, and I just don't know what to do with it. I've tried for all this time.
Well, did you ever look and see where your relatives have their jade plants?
Well, she has it in her east window, and I have mine in my southeast window.
Okay. What do you think, David?
You have yours in what window?
Southeast.
The southeast window. That might be... They like a half day of light, especially filtered light, rather than the full sun.
Oh.
They'll take a little bit of direct sun, but they'd rather have, filtering the light through a sheer curtain is a really good way to handle a lot of houseplants. And a jade plant will do better with, probably, it sounds like it would do better with less light than it's getting.
Okay. And what about watering? I have a lot of plants, and they do really well, but this is the one that...
That doesn't do so well. Well, how often do you water a jade plant?
With these guys, they want low water.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is, you stick your finger in the down into the soil, and wait until it's 2 inches deep before your fingertip starts to sense the coolness of the moisture in the pot. So let it dry down to 2 inches, and then water it.
Yeah.
And don't ever let it let the pot sit in water in its saucer.
You know, and you've got a lot of plants, that's the problem. Is some plants, you know, you're watering one plant, well, throw some water on the next one, too, and that's not always the best idea.
That's right. The number one killer of houseplants is overwatering.
Killing it with kindness, as we like to say.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, man. Sharon, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Having some fun today talking with David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth. They are they have lots of experience, obviously, and they have lots of good books. They have 4 books. The latest one we're talking about is What's Wrong with My Houseplant? I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests today, David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth, who are authors of What's Wrong with My Houseplant. We're talking houseplants today with them. Certainly you can join in if you have a question or comment. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. Or call. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And I'm going to take a couple. Jill in La Crescent, Minnesota emailed that in August, her son took his lemon tree to the county fair, proudly displaying his first tiny lemon. The lemon has continued to grow and has finally turned yellow. How do I know when it's ripe and ready to eat? Well, it turned yellow.
That's the first clue. It turned yellow. well, it kind of depends on if, whether it's a Meyer lemon or a regular lemon, because I want to say if it starts to feel soft, the Meyer lemons are really are pretty soft at maturity. So they will be a nice sort of golden, orangey-yellow color and soft when they're ripe. The regular lemons will be much firmer. They're harder, but they'll still be yellow. And I'd say once it's been yellow and you just squeeze it, if it feels a little bit soft, I think you're good to go.
I would agree. You know, I have my lime tree is a Bear's lime, and I've had really good success. Limey's produced I don't even know how many limes over the last four years.
We have one exactly like that, too. It's a nice, beautiful plant, and it's almost always got limes on it.
Yep.
We can harvest them whenever we need a lime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have Nora on Facebook asked if there are houseplants that do well in offices with fluorescent lighting.
Oh, yeah. There are lots of houseplants that do well with that kind of lighting. You want plants that will stay relatively small, though. You don't want to get a palm tree under fluorescent lights, because the plant has to the lights have to be close enough to the plant to do some good. So, well, for example, African violets are gorgeous under fluorescent lights.
They are pretty, but don't overwater them.
Yeah, they don't take up a lot of room. They don't get tall. And you can move the lights down close to them. There's some good, orchids like Phalaenopsis orchids. The moth orchid does well under fluorescent lights, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Henry in Milwaukee has
I have a follow-up question on that.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. Go ahead, Catherine.
Fluorescent lights are in the ceiling.
My guess is she's talking about fluorescent lights in the ceiling, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's really low light levels then from the ceiling to your desk or table. But still, there are a number of plants that will do well under that kind of light. I'm thinking one would be cast iron plants.
Huh.
It's sometimes called barroom plant because it's almost indestructible. It's a pretty plant. Its flowers are kind of bizarre, but the plant itself is really makes a nice house plant, and it will grow under the lowest light conditions you can imagine.
And you know, I did my Christmas cactus was in my office, and it was fluorescent light in the ceiling. And really not in front of I had a window, but it wasn't even close to the window, and it did great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd go a long time, 2 weeks, I'd forget to water it, and I'd throw some water on it, and it would flower. It'd flower about 10 months of the year, to be perfectly honest, probably because I didn't take good care of it.
Well, it could be. It also could be because the light regime was irregular for it. If it gets a series of 14-hour long nights, then it will come into bloom.
Well, I must have had 14-hour nights because that thing bloomed all the time. Oh, and I was the department chair at the time, and I left it in the office with the new department chair, who I think promptly killed it somehow. But that's another story. We won't get into that. Let's go to Janet at Oak Creek next. Hi, Janet. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Two questions. First, a fig. I've had a fig tree for about 6 years. This year I've left it in the garage. But I just would like some information on the best nutrition best way to get, you know, some really nice figs out of it is a lot of it just determined on how hot our summers are. So just the best way to handle a fig, putting it out in summer. And then the other question is regarding a Hindu plant, Indian Hindu, or I'm sorry, Hindu rope plant.
Hindu rope plant.
Yes. I would like to get it to flower. Same thing. I've had this plant for at least 5 years. It seems to do very, very well. It keeps growing, but no flowers. I did have it facing a west direction, but behind beveled glass. I have now moved it facing east in a very bright room, kind of open concept home, so it gets bright light. So, again, just the best way to get that to bloom. I was overwatering it because I thought it was a rainforest plant, but then I found out you leave it more dry. So any tips there, and I'll get any advice.
All right, so we got figs and Hindu rope.
Yeah, is your fig plant a sorry, I was trying to do a quick search here. Is your fig plant a weeping fig, or is it a fig that makes fruit?
Figs that make the brown fruit. Turkey.
Oh, it's a brown turkey. Okay, so it's Ficus carica. Yeah, I haven't ever tried to grow one of those as a houseplant. We have a really nice one that, out in the garden, and we get wonderful figs from it. It's a desert king, which does really well here in the Northwest. So you're putting your fig out to grow all summer long, but then you put it in where it's protected during the winter.
That's correct. In the past, I had kept it in the house. It was producing figs too early, and they were not sweet at all. And I would pull those off, and then the secondary figs were too small. So this year, I decided just leave it in the garage, and then hopefully I won't put it out too early where I, you know, end up killing it. But
All right.
Yeah, I think that's probably a wise thing to do, is because you bring it in and start it into active growth, and it'll make those first figs on the new growth as it grows. And given the warmth, the heat, and the sunlight that it will have, then you should have some nice sized and sweet figs.
Mm.
They produce two crops a year. What they call the first crop is what they call the breba crop, and then the second crop of the year is what they call the main crop. And it's on the new growth of the spring that you get those early figs, the breba crop, and that's the only crop we get off of our fig. Because the main crop, just there isn't enough heat in our climate for those figs to mature before frost.
Now, if there isn't enough heat in your climate, there isn't enough heat in our climate for sure. I would think, because what's your zone?
I am zone 5.
So you're zone 5, huh?
Yeah,
We're in zone 8, but we're a very cool climate. We have a heck of a time getting a ripe tomato here in the Northwest.
Oh, that would be a real sad thing here in Wisconsin if we couldn't get ripe tomatoes.
Oh, it is sad. But, you know, we have a very long frost-free growing season. But things like cabbage and peas grow really well here. Not the warm season crops have a trouble.
Oh, that Hindu rope?
Hindu rope plant. I don't know that plant by that name. Do you have a scientific name for it?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Well, I'm just looking it up on, I Googled it, a Hindu rope plant, at least some of these authors claim it's Hoya carnosa, which we call wax plant. You know, that's one thing about houseplants. You know, lots of plants have many common names in English, but there are some houseplants that have 10, 11, 12 different common names, so it's hard to know what people are talking about. But Hindu rope plant or wax plant is a good
vine to have in the house with beautiful, beautiful, fragrant flowers. Is yours flowered for you yet?
That's why I'm calling. I would love to see some flowers, and I've had it for about 5 years.
And
I know
it grows.
They like to be pot bound, and I know it's probably in a little bit too big of a pot. But I talked to someone else and said, "Don't, you know, replant it now." But it was facing west. Now I put it in a east window. It gets a little bit more direct light, but just the morning. But it is in a well-lit room otherwise because it's open concept, my home.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, the east light is good for it. It'll tolerate low light, meaning, the plant's not going to die in low light levels, but it won't have enough energy to flower. So the east window where it gets morning sun is a really good location for it.
And you fertilize that at all or not?
Yeah, I would. Any organic fertilizer, but make sure it's one where the second number on the package is higher than the other two numbers.
Okay.
That's phosphorus. You want more phosphorus in order to promote flowering.
Oh, yeah, that makes really good sense. Janet, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very, very much. Boy, there's always so many great calls here on Garden Talk. We have so many wonderful listeners, and I'm happy to have our two guests today with us to talk about houseplants, David Deardorff, one of them, and Catherine Wadsworth, the other, and the title of their book, What's Wrong with My Houseplant? And we've been having a lot of fun talking with them on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller talking houseplants today with my two guests, David Deardorff, a PhD in botany, years of experience as a plant pathologist, Catherine Wadsworth, naturalist and author. Together, they've written 4 books on gardening, including their latest, What's Wrong with My Houseplant, and they look at organic ways to keep your plant healthy and happy. And so I'm having a lot of fun talking with them. I hope you enjoy listening in. Maybe you have a question. Call in 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Sarah in Port Washington, Wisconsin, yep, has a question. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
So I have an orchid that I received as a Mother's Day gift in 2013. It's just one of your typical grocery store orchids. It did not come with any drainage holes in the bottom of the plant. I've been hesitant to transfer it, although I feel like I should. It's doing, the last year and a half, it's been doing really well. I feel like it's constantly blooming. So I'm just wondering your thoughts on if I should just keep letting it go since it is doing so well, or if I should consider transferring it to a larger pot with holes.
And you know what type of orchid is it? Do you know?
I think it's a Phalaenopsis, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, probably. It was purchased in a kind of like grocery store.
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's turn to David for that. David, hi. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the Phalaenopsis orchids are gorgeous plants, and they do have to have a drainage hole in the pot. The roots need a lot of air. Can you tell what it's potted in? If you look at the root ball of the plant, it should be potted in just straight orchid bark.
Exactly
little,
what it looks
little,
like.
That's what
oh, that's
like.
Perfect.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's just what it needs because they need a lot of air around their roots. And if they're potted in, well, like if you put them in just regular potting soil, then you know the plant will die.
You'll kill them.
So,
right.
But, yeah. So good. I'm glad.
And I did buy a bag of specific potting orchid mixture for the day that I would transfer it over if I were to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm just afraid to do it. I don't want to harm it since it's been doing so good.
Yeah.
Is it in bloom right now?
Yes, it is.
Man, I wouldn't do anything.
You know, I wouldn't do it. Wait until the last flower has faded, and it may. Yeah, I have one. I have a Phalaenopsis at home too. Catherine and I have it in a nice east window, and it has been continuing to produce flowers for about a year and a half now.
That's exactly what mine was doing. Yep.
It wants, you know, I want to up-pot it too, but I'm not going to do it until the flowers are gone. It still has two flowers right now. When those are gone, I'll probably up-pot it. But when you do, you know, just take it out of its pot and put it in a slightly larger pot and use your orchid bark, but make sure that the new pot has drainage holes so the plant can get air.
Yeah.
And what do I do with all those aerial roots? Because I feel like there's quite a few. Do I tuck any of those in, or do
No.
I just leave it as is?
Yeah, leave it as is. And then if you have if you spray your plants with a mister, just make sure you mist those roots and you know, whenever you mist the plant. And that will keep them healthy. Orchid roots, you know, most plants have the roots are it's called geotropism. The roots go down. According to gravity, and orchid roots don't. They'll go up, down, and sideways. They grow everywhere. And that's normal and natural. They do not have to be inside the pot.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Henry in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Henry.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
So I planted an avocado seed, not last summer, but the summer before that, and put it outside. You know, probably planted the seed in a cup of water with toothpicks in March or so, and then once it hit June, put it outside. Grew really well through the summer, brought it back inside, did well over the winter, and then now this winter, the leaves have kind of started to die from the outside in and fall off.
Not unusual.
So I'm wondering, yeah.
A two-year-old avocado plant, then, or a year and a half.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and I missed what's happening to it. Is it the leaves that are starting to turn brown?
Yeah, the leaves are they're turning like a really really dark brown, almost black from the outside of the leaf, and then kind of creeping in along the stems of the leaf, and the biggest leaves have turned yellow, but then the smaller leaves have just gone straight to that really dark brown and crispy.
Okay, I'm trying to think about that because the avocado is an evergreen tree. It keeps its leaves for you know more than one season, but they're not. The leaves don't live forever. Eventually, they die and drop off the tree. So it could be that leaves that its first leaves that are now 2 years old. Are those the ones that are turning brown and getting ready to fall off the tree?
So all of those that were on the stem, like the stem is probably, you know, 2 inches around now, all of those leaves have fallen off, and it started to be the leaves kind of in the clusters up at the top, the new growth, so I have, you know, little tiny, you know, inch-long leaves that are still turning black on the edges, too, and then falling off. So it's kind of gone to all of them doing this.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, that's not good. That sounds, if they're turning black on the edges on those young leaves, it sounds like it could be a fungus disease.
Okay.
That's what I'm suspecting. And, but I don't know which one. So, one of the good, is there a good air movement around that plant?
It's not any, it's, you know, off of a wall, not up against a wall, so.
Okay, well, that's good. That'll certainly help. So some of the things you can do about, I don't know for sure that it's a fungus, but it sounds like it could be. So let's think about something that you might do about that. Try using, you know, there's a couple of things that you could use. One is mix a tablespoon of baking soda in a quart of water, in a gallon of water, and put that into a spray bottle and spray the leaves of your plant with this baking soda water.
Okay, so a tablespoon of baking soda and a gallon of water?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And baking soda is really good for protecting your plant against new infections. It kills powdery mildew, so it's really good for that. But it's also good protection because it changes the pH of the surface of the leaf so that fungal spores have a harder time to germinate and infect the plant.
Oh,
so that,
now, would those spores
that's a good thing.
With the naked eye? Or?
What's that?
Would I be able to, like, if I inspected the leaves, would it be noticeable that I could see that those spores on there, or are they not?
No, they're microscopic.
No.
They're in the air, and so you can't see them. Another thing that you can do, there's this new bacterial fungicide that can do really good. I've used it very successfully on some plants. The bacteria is Bacillus subtilis, but the product name, I don't know if I can mention a product by name. Can
sure,
I do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's called a Serenade. And you can buy that at your local garden center. It's called Serenade. And what it has in it is a living bacteria that you spray on the leaves, and that bacteria then lives on the leaves. And when fungus tries to infect your plant, it kills the fungus.
Hmm.
Yeah, it works really well.
Now, do you think this fungus would be on my other plants? So, like, right pretty close proximity to this avocado, I have a grapefruit tree that I planted, you know, from seed as well. That's probably about 3 feet tall, about the same size. And that plant's doing awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some fungi, like anthracnose is a fungus. It's actually a Colitotrichum, but that infects avocado trees. And so you may be dealing with something like that.
Yeah. And it may not affect the other. Anthracnose is not a fun one either. Not a good one to have.
But no, it's not.
Give that a try, no. Henry. And I hope things work out for you. Thank you so much. I was never able to keep an avocado plant beyond about a year and a half. It's just for some reason I just kill them every single time.
Yeah, yeah, they're not easy.
No, they're not.
I agree.
Catherine in Wausau has a problem that she's hoping we can help deal with. Catherine, hi. Thank you for calling.
A very good program. Thank you, Larry.
Sure thing.
And I have African violet plants, and they're slowly dying off on me. At one time, they were doing very well, and that's maybe when I was giving them the African violet food, which the second number was high, and they would flower.
Yeah.
And I would water them from the bottom. Well, now I've been kind of, it's probably my fault, just I water them with my leftover coffee. And they're real, most of them are kind of limp. And the stem is, they die off from the bottom, so the stem is getting kind of long.
Oh. All right. Well, David, what about this business of coffee water as a watering medium for African violets?
Well, African violets do like an acid soil. Coffee has something in it. When we know from research that when you put spent coffee grounds, when you put those on your blueberries and your gardenias, it doesn't change the pH of the soil. But nevertheless, you get a growth response from the coffee force. For some reason that I don't know about yet. We do know that it's not the acidity that makes the difference. But I suspect that even though African violets do want an acid soil, they might be getting, are they too wet?
No, I let them dry out. And I haven't been watering them from the bottom because it's a pain many times. And I just I don't touch the leaves. I just water them good, and I forget about them for a while, and then
Water them again. Yeah.
Okay. So, but it sounds like the growth is getting very soft and weak and
right.
Leggy.
Yeah, but there are the stems or the stalk, the leaf stalk or the stems of the flowers, are they getting mushy at all, turning dark brown?
No.
No. Okay. And so then how much light are they getting?
Well, I have it in the south window, and I know that African violets aren't supposed to get that much light, but they have always liked it there.
Yeah, they're not supposed to want direct sun. But sun, too much sun would not make soft growth. You'd get soft growth with either too little light, which these are not getting, or too much nitrogen.
Oh, yeah.
And nitrogen is which number
first,
is that?
First number.
It's the first number on the package.
So what would they be getting the nitrogen from?
Oh, every manufacturer gets nitrogen from different sources, but usually it's from urea and potassium nitrate and ammonium nitrate, things like that. That's where the nitrogen comes from.
Oh, would there be nitrogen in the coffee? No.
No.
There would not. You should take a look at that number. Look at the number on your, you said the middle number was big, but the higher number, but how high was the first number?
The first number is not that high. Let me see. It is 8, 14, and 9.
Oh, that should be fine.
Yeah, it should be about perfect.
Could I water them with the African violet food every time, or should I just do that like once every 3 weeks or so?
Oh, I would do it once every 3 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Even once a month.
You may have been just putting it on too frequently, and that would create some of the circumstances that you have with those plants. So that's something to think about, Catherine. And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lots of great callers here. Gigi in Madison up next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about my air plant. I was wondering what the best environment for it is, because in the past, all my air plants have died, and I'm just wondering what the best environment is for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, most of the air plants want like a half day of direct sun. Mm-hmm. They don't want a full day of full sun all day long, like in a south window. That's too much light for them.
Okay.
So they don't want that. But in an east window where they're getting a half day, that works pretty well. I think that's the best environment in terms of light for them. They want moderate temperatures. Normal daytime temperatures of around 70 degrees in your house is good for them. The other thing about them is it depends partly on what kind of air plant you have, but most of them have the base of the leaves makes a vase.
Okay.
And you want to keep about an inch of water in that vase all the time.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate the call. And Philip in Minocqua has a question. Hi, Phil. Philip, thank you for calling.
Just have a question about some clippings I got. I got some clippings of a cactus orchid, or at least what I believe is one. I'm just wondering, do I treat it like a regular orchid, and just how should I treat it?
All right, so, and these are just slips, or?
Has a couple leaves and then a couple stems are separate clippings that I put into a pot with some just orchid bark and all that, and so I've been going at it. And I mean, there's some new growth, but there's not a ton of it. And I'm just wondering, what can I do to help promote it to get it bloom the next few years whenever it gets big enough for it?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of orchids, what they really like is a constant supply of weak fertilizer. So usually what most orchid growers do is every time you mix up a water-soluble fertilizer at one-quarter strength, so it's weak. You know, in their natural environment, the orchids that we grow as houseplants are epiphytes that live up in the trees in the forest, and where they get their nutrients from bird droppings and leaves and twigs that fall on them from above. So they are always having a weak supply of nutrients all the time. So anyway, you mix the fertilizer at one-quarter strength and then water your orchid with that every time you water.
There you go.
So
that would be a big help. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ann in Green Bay says she's got an English ivy that was a small dish garden that was started in 1977. Now very large, has a very large stalk rather than a stem. So it's a stalk. Is there a way to take a cutting to start a new plant? She's tried a few times and hasn't had much luck. So we've got an English ivy.
Okay. Well, English ivy is kind of funny for one particular reason. When an ivy plant is a juvenile. Most of us grow them when they have a vine-like structure. They grow like vines, and so you plant them, and those are the juvenile leaves, and that's its juvenile habit. But when it goes through puberty and, you know, starts to mature sexually to become an adult, it changes its growth habit and becomes a bush instead of a vine.
Okay.
And when it's juvenile and when it's a youngster, they're easy to root from cuttings. They're super easy. They grow roots all over the place. But when it's mature in the bush form, they're very difficult to root.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. So, but usually, if this is what's happening to this plant, and I suspect it is, in about 30 years, is what it takes for the plant to mature to become a sexual adult. So, but somewhere on the plant, there will be vine-like stems near the base of the plant that have juvenile foliage. So
not only do they change
to a bush habit, but the shape of the leaves changes too. So find a piece of the juvenile plant and get that to root, and then you can start over again.
Well, David and Catherine, here we are totally out of time. I really enjoy your book. I hope sometime we'll have a chance to maybe talk again. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
You bet. It's been fun.
A lot of fun, and thank you so much.
Well, I like your book a lot. Keeping Houseplants Healthy the Organic Way. That's the main title of the book. The authors, David Deardorff and Catherine Wadsworth, they obviously know a whole lot about houseplants and a lot of other, and garden plants as well, obviously. This is their fourth book. But this is a keeper for sure. Lots of great photography and very practical information that you and I can use. Good for them and good for us as well. And thanks a lot for listening. I just to let you know, next time on Garden Talk, we'll be talking with Joel Karsten about straw bale gardening. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.